New York City is where it started.
Globally is where we are.
Vashani Radio app. Download it for free in the App Store or listen online at VashaniRadio.com.
It's time to grow with the SEO queen. Get visibility like never before. Your traffic's gonna explode. It's time to grow with the SEO queen. Receive the perfect leads like never before. Your traffic's gonna explode. It's time to grow.
Welcome to the SEO Queen Tech Show, a podcast to help you get more credibility, visibility, and profitability through inspiration, technology, and marketing insight. This podcast is for professionals and entrepreneurs who are looking to get more customers, clients, and patients. We are broadcast worldwide on Vashani Radio, iHeartRadio, and iTunes. Vashani Radio, always talking about everything from New York City. You can listen to the SEO Queen Tech Show on any mobile phone or tablet device. Also, as a thank you gift for listening to the SEO Queen Tech Show, you can always visit SEOQueen.com, SEOQUEEN.com, and book a complimentary strategy session. All you have to do is go to SEOQueen.com, click on Speak to the SEO Queen. So, today is a special episode because we have a special guest. Last week, I talked about keywords, but today I have company. So, my very special guest is the Vice Mayor of the, I believe it's the 43rd largest city in the United States. I think it's 43. Yep, 43. And the name of the city is Long Beach. And my guest is Rex Richardson. He represents the 9th District in North Long Beach. And this is his second term as vice mayor of the city. And he was elected to council in 2014, and he made history as Long Beach's youngest member to ever serve. Regionally, he is the immediate past president of the Southern California Association of Governments and a member of the South Coast Air Quality Management District Board of Directors. Rex has earned a reputation as a hardworking leader focused on ensuring every Long Beach neighborhood receives equitable investment and access to opportunity. He has brought neighborhood, labor, business, and clergy leaders together to improve economic conditions in North Long Beach and has proven himself as a collaborative leader and change agent. So without further ado, I want to welcome to the show Rex Richardson. How are you today?
Hey, Z, how are you? I'm feeling great.
Oh, awesome.
Thank you for the invitation.
Yeah, I'm so glad you were able to take time out of your very busy schedule to drop by the show. And I just kind of want to find out from you. My first question is, how did you decide to get involved in politics and in the city of Long Beach?
Well, I'll tell you, when I grew up, I didn't necessarily want or know that I would have a life of public service. You know, I just wanted to put down roots in a city own a home and have a job and have a family and just the same things everybody else did. But it, for me, was something I really, truly aspired to because growing up, I moved around a whole lot, right? So my father was in the Air Force. My mom worked at General Motors. And at some point when I was very young, they divorced. And our family, you know, moved around a lot at that point. And I saw how hard she worked, you know, kind of struggled to get back on our feet. I remember moving to California on a Greyhound bus. And it was my sister, who's a year older than me, my little brother, and my mom, and we arrived in California. We had a two-bedroom apartment. My brother and sister shared one room, my mom shared the other room, and I slept on the couch. And I love sleeping on the couch because when I turned 16, I had access to the front door. And so, you know, we were a small family, but we were tight-knit, we stuck together. We all worked hard. I worked at Jack in the Box, and my mom worked at Arby's, making minimum wage. My sister worked at the local stationery shop. My job was to pay the rent. My job was paid the light bill. My mom paid the rent. My sister paid the phone bill. So we all had a bill to pay. And but we all committed, you know, my mom taught us to, you know, focus on education because that's something that no one can ever take away from you. My mom, you know, I was really proud to watch her go to school to be a nurse while me and my sister strived to go to college. And we both were first generation college students. We both went to Cal State Dominguez Hills. And, you know, we were a tight-knit family, but we've seen what happens when you stick together and you work hard. And so, you know, what inspired me to get involved is, you know, when, you know, I was in college, I was student body president, and I got into community organizing. And, when I bought my first house in Long Beach when I was 25, I saw that it was made up, you know, this community in North Long Beach was made up of families just like mine. People who want to work hard, work at multiple jobs just to make ends meet, but they want the very best for their families. And all they need is an opportunity, just like my family. We just needed opportunity. And so I got involved. You know, I bought my first house at 25. And it was a great opportunity. You know, my mom never owned a home. And so I took a lot of pride in that. And I noticed that the community that I lived in, we lacked some basic things. Banks. We're only district without a bank. We're the only district without a library or a paramedic. And that's what really caused me to get involved. Because I said, I'm an owner here, right? I'm invested in the city. And I think the city has a covenant to provide for every community. And that wasn't the case in mine. And that's why I stepped forward, ran for office when I was 30, fought for libraries and banks and became the youngest council member in the city's history, built the Michelle Obama Neighborhood Library, the largest, most modest, a beautiful library.
It is a gorgeous library.
And invested in things like bringing the first bank and restoring our paramedic services and building parks, open space. That's what I focused on as a council member. But it was truly just inspired by my community was full of people just like mine and, you know, working women just like my mom. And that's what inspired me to step up and lead.
Oh, that's awesome. So one thing that you mentioned that I didn't know you were involved in student government going to college. I was a student government leader too. I was the election commissioner.
You went to like MIT or something, right?
Yeah, I went to MIT, and then I also was president of my dormitory, and then I was the co-founder of the Multiculturalism Awareness Committee, which became a standing committee of the Undergraduate Association. So I could definitely understand how you made the transition from college to public life. That's awesome. So my next question is, you know, after you've done like the Michelle Obama Library, you talked about that, what other initiatives have you spearheaded in Long Beach and Southern California to help improve, you know, whether economics development or technology?
Well, I love local government. I realized at a very young age that I'm good at it. It's your local government it's not, you know, Washington, D.C. partisanship. It's not Sacramento partisanship. Local government is where the rubber meets the road. You can drive down the street, see a vacant lot and say, I imagine a library in that vacant lot. You can work and actually see it happen. You know, you can see graffiti and say, I don't want graffiti there. I want to see the most incredible mural on that wall. You can do that, right? You can say, hey, my community doesn't have a coffee shop. Let's build one. You know, we don't have enough grocery stores. Let's start a farmer's market. Local government is where the rubber meets the road. And so I used a community empowerment model initially, organizing neighborhood associations, getting people inspired in their government, teaching them the process of a public policy and government by involving them. And one thing led to another. I ended up being invited into larger roles. People wondered, how are we turning this neighborhood around? It's had patterns that vary for generations. So I was invited, you know, I was invited to be a part of regional tables. I became the president of Southern California Association of Governments. That's the largest metropolitan planning organization in America, with six counties, 191 cities, and 19 million residents. You know, I was invited to be, you know, I ran for vice mayor when I was 32 and became the youngest vice mayor in the city's history and reelected as vice mayor when I was 36. And so all of these roles that we've done have all been built on the foundation of just using local government and making it modern and making it relevant for people to actually see what we can achieve when we work together. So our narrative is great. I mean, we've been able to see, North Long Beach really have a transformation. We call it the Uptown Renaissance. So it's not just about, you know, I built this building or whatever. It's about creating a movement of civic engagement and inspiration and pride in your community and making sure we demand a higher standard, less liquor stores and motels, more grocery stores, banks, libraries, coffee shops, things that add value to a neighborhood, help make a neighborhood, and ultimately, are more sustainable, create a more healthy, more sustainable community.
Okay, excellent. So my next question to you is, how have you been able to collaborate and empower entrepreneurs in Long Beach? And what advice do you have for aspiring community activists and other professionals who seek to have a positive impact on their municipality of residence?
Well, I'll tell you, when I ran for office the first time, mm-hmm. I was fresh home, just got home from my honeymoon. And like literally the week after our honeymoon is when I announced my campaign for city council. And
wait, hold on. Your wife lets you declare to run for office a week after your honeymoon?
Hey, I mean, look, we got married. We did our honeymoon. We checked out. When we got back, it was time to get to work.
Oh, wow. That's incredible that you have such a supportive partner. But continue.
Absolutely. Well, she didn't just sit home. She did her thing, too. My wife runs the business analytics program at USC. She got her doctorate during the pandemic.
Right.
So she's a hard worker. She's, involved in education and the business community. And so she's a leader in her own right. My advice to folks is, it may sound a little cliche, but be the change you want to see in your community. Just like Gandhi, right. Just like Martin Luther King, transformational leadership, Barack Obama, right? Like we are the ones we're waiting for. And so when I ran for office at 30, when you're 30 and you're trying to shake up a system and you're trying to like say, I want more for my community. Sometimes right. people are upset with that. It disturbs the natural order. Who is right. this guy? Who does he think he is to say, not only do I want a library, I also want a community center. I also want a bank. I also want clean streets and open space, right? So the forces who resist change, they there are things that they do. They gaslight you. They tell you, it's a hope and a dream. I remember when I said, hey, I'm looking at these other areas of town that are thriving. I see the Bixby Knowles has a business district and 4th Street has a business district.
Well, right.
We want a business district. So I went to the city and said, I was chief of staff to Steve Neal. I was probably 27. I went to the city and said, hey, we need a business district in North Long Beach. I went to our planning director at the time. And she said, well, North Long Beach just isn't ready. The businesses aren't ready. Come back in 10 years. I was like, well, how long does it take to start?
Come back in 10 years?
10 years. So they said, how long does it take to start one? She said, 10 years. I said, okay, well, today is day one. And then tomorrow's day two. And day after that was day three. And we got it done in 2 years, not 10. Because we ultimately have to determine our own fate. No one's going to save you in local government. Our job is to empower our own communities to be the change that we want to see in their communities. And so my advice is like, don't work on someone else's timetable. You live, you have one life to live. You deserve the best and you just need to go out and get it.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So one of the, I would say one of the feathers in your cap, I know, is the framework for reconciliation. I know you've been very active in equity initiatives in the city of Long Beach. And so I want to know your thoughts for, what are you most proud of that the initiative has accomplished? I know I read an analysis of the report. I haven't read the report yet, but it said that only about 22 of the over 100 action items have been accomplished. But what do you see as you move into from the vice mayor to a mayoral role, what would be your priorities, to positively impact the community and the entrepreneurs?
Well, I'll tell you a couple things. One, I think you might have read the report wrong. It was only 20 out of hundreds were not moved on.
Okay, stand corrected.
We had about 95 to 100 action items that have already moved forward out of the 130 some odd action items. And so there were only 20 or so that hadn't moved forward yet. So, mm-hmm. but what I'll tell you is, we're in a place in cities and in America where we're redefining what resiliency means. Resiliency at one point just make sure that your buildings are retrofitted for an earthquake, or make sure you have enough insurance to get through a fire.
Right.
So resiliency for a city today, it's changed. It's changed because of everything we've gone through over the last 2 years. It tells you that a resilient city is a city that is prepared for a public health emergency, mm-hmm. like a pandemic. A city, a modern resilient city, is a city that's prepared financially for economic crisis, like we just dealt with the last 2 years. And it also says a modern resilient city is a city that acknowledges race and institutional racism and inequity, because when you don't, your city can be shook to the core. Look at what happened to Minneapolis. Minneapolis was not known as a city that was, you know, had this, you know, terrible history of racism. That's not, that wasn't its reputation as a city. It was a modern American city, relatively progressive mayors. I remember in 2016, I was invited to the White House for my brother's Keeper Summit. And I sat on a panel at the White House. Next to me on the panel was Betsy Hodges, who was the mayor of Minneapolis. And she was I was invited because I led the establishment of the Office of Equity and the My Brother's Keeper initiative in Long Beach. She was invited because she led also equity initiatives and Boys and Men of Color initiatives in Minneapolis. And so we were invited here by the Obama administration to talk. Now, fast forward from 2016 to 2020, when we saw the tragic incident with George Floyd being, you know, murdered and, you know, live. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if that could happen in Minneapolis, a city with a good reputation, mm-hmm. could be harboring a culture within its city that can shake that city to the very core, that is a wake-up call to every American city. Mm-hmm. Long Beach is larger than Minneapolis. Every city has responsibility to look under the hood and say, are we truly changing our culture as a city? Because if we're not, we're not a resilient city. It's a threat to our city. Right. What we need to do is lean into inclusion and equity. And so what does that look like, checking under the hood? A part of it is just acknowledging that we don't know what we don't know. And there's a deep history of institutional racism. And unless rooted it out, it's likely still there in our systems and our policies. The second thing is, like, if you see patterns of disparity in your city, North, Central, West Long Beach, with poverty and other issues for generations, mm-hmm. then that means the system is working with some degree of precision. You know, that that system is it's producing these outcomes. It's maintaining this equation. And so what that means is we have to commit to a system change solution. So what we did with the reconciliation, go ahead.
Speaking of system change, I kind of want to delve a little bit deeper into that, because the flip side of institutional racism is institutionalized white privilege. And I just wanted to know from you, why is it that the city prosecutor and the city auditor don't host their website on the city website servers? And also, there was an article that just came out about the city auditor about earmarking $5,000 a month since they've been in office to this consulting firm that nobody knows what they do. So as a vice mayor, as a mayoral candidate, how are you dealing with or planning to deal with, or are you even aware of these two situations?
Well, I don't know anything about the website hosting stuff. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, I think we probably just need to talk with the IT director to figure that out. But mm-hmm. but I think it goes back to what I was just saying. We have to commit to systems thinking. What we're doing as a city is making a transition. As a city, by adopting the Racial Equity Reconciliation Initiative, all of these things, there were a number of recommendations organized into four categories, and one of them is sort of changing our own system, our service philosophy as a city, to be more inclusive, more equitable, because the city's job, it's the city's job to advance equity, not individuals. It's not the role of just the individual councilman to make sure banks and libraries happen. It's the role of the whole city. So what we're doing as part of this initiative, one example is we have an equity ambassadors program. That's people that are embedded in every department. Every department of the city whose job is to coordinate and make sure that we're advancing equity within and baking it into each department, right? Mm-hmm. So every department should have equity ambassadors now. We're one of the first cities in America to do that. A second thing, You know, we've trained more than 1,000 city employees in the past year on implicit bias and equity. And why is that important? That means what that means is, if you think about harassment and issues, you know, that were prevalent, let's say in corporate America or in cities, think about the TV show Mad Men. Think about, you know, just think about culture, the culture in Hollywood, culture within government. That didn't turn around overnight. It took like everybody that works in the private or public sector does annual trainings. They do capacity buildings where you can't move up until you're creating an anti-harassment environment, right? Well, that's what has to happen on this bias. You have to create anti-racist environments where you know how to identify it and you know how to root it out. That's sort of what we do now, right? So when it comes to the issues, like you gave a few examples, you said, why does the auditor do this? Why does the prosecutor do that? Well, we can go through and make excuses for one thing or another thing or another thing, or we could talk about the systemic problem and how we change the system. Where it's the role of the system to be more efficient, be more equitable, to where it's everybody's job to be an ambassador for that. So when you see something that doesn't look right or it creates an outcome that's unfair, then it's not your job just to sit back and say, hey, it wasn't me. It's your job to have a protocol on how you advance that to HR, how you, you know, create an anti-racist environment. That's what's happening in America right now. And I think it's important because it helps our city avoid lawsuits. It avoids our city. It helps our city become more resilient. And so it's all connected. That's the point. So you may have a question about a website or about a contract or whatever it is. But to me, it all comes back to having an efficient government that is accountable to the public and has public trust and is resilient.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. I think, you know, you mentioned George Floyd, and there has been a lot of initiatives both for, you know, businesses in terms of grants and technical assistance to help entrepreneurs grow their business. And then there's also been the other piece when you talk about police. And so I think one of the things that I read in the framework for reconciliation was the fact that many of the services that police in Long Beach were doing were moved to more nonviolent professionals to handle those emergencies, like mental health and some other things. Can you speak to some of the progress that the city of Long Beach has made in terms of making it easier for people to get help without the police?
Yeah, well, I think police are an important part of the public safety continuum. You got to have, you have to have police. Like, you know, my school of thought is that
I agree.
Just have to be more comprehensive, right? And,
right.
You know, I think it's you know, I go back to, you know, in my community, you know, it's never easy when you hear about, when you get that phone call from a watch commander or from the, you know, your North Division commander that there's been, you know, someone's been killed in your community. It's it's always heartbreaking, breaking every time. But I particularly remember this one circumstance. It was within 1 week, there were three incidents of violent crime. There were three young men, Latino and African-American, all within the same week were murdered. And they were unrelated incidents, but there were some things I saw in common. They were all around the same age, between 19 and 22. They all happened around the same time of day, between like 12 and 2 in the afternoon. And, you know, and they all happened in the 9th district. And this was my first year in office. So I was 31 at the time. So I remember thinking at the time, well, damn, these kids were 22 years. Where was I when I was 19 or I was 22 at 12 o'clock in the afternoon or 1 o'clock in the afternoon? What was I on a weekday?
Yeah, I was in probably.
I was on high school.
I was in college.
Where were you? You were in college. I was in college. I had an opportunity to go to college to be OP. And I just wonder if those young men had an opportunity, if they were on a college campus, if they had a job that paid them a living wage where it was worth their while, if they had an opportunity, would they have been where they were in that moment? And which brings the follow-up question is, would they be alive today? what would they be today? What would their lives be like today if they were given that opportunity? So when I think about safety, to me, yes, there's got to be suppression. When you call 911, you are a taxpayer. You need a healthy response time. But you also should be able to walk down your street safely. You should have libraries in your community. You should have schools that are putting people on track to go to college. You should have workforce training. You should have parks that are well-lit and safe. It's a compact that the city has with its residents. And we've been failing that compact for generations.
Right.
It just isn't the case. And so, in uniformly across our city.
So
I say, yeah, go ahead.
Enough about Long Beach. I want to know your opinion on the view that, you know, many people have that the government isn't responsible for, you know, reparations or anything like that. Can you speak to the social contract between, you know, people and the government and what your view is on that?
Sure. I mean, you know, I think the role of cities is changing a lot. Mm-hmm. So, you know, back in the day, you know, you could, what does the city do? It hires police officer and your firefighters, and the city street, you know, trims our trees and sweeps our streets. And every once in a while, they'll build a new park and a community center and we'll have a ribbon cutting. Well, that, you know, that's great, right? But, you know, that's not what cities do anymore.
Right.
Cities now are picking up the slack where states and federal government haven't stepped up. You know, federal government has dealt with gridlock for decades now, where they can't show leadership on things like poverty and housing the way they used to. You know, HUD used to be out in the communities producing housing. They don't do that anymore.
Mm.
Right. And then states, think about states. There's been a constant effort over the past, you know, few decades to realign services away from the state and into local communities' responsibilities. So think about realignment of shifting folks from prisons into county jails and ultimately into communities. Well, no money came with that for local communities to prepare for reintegration and to make sure people have job training and housing and the things they need to survive. So the pressure on the city is growing. Homelessness, guess what? Long Beach has its own health department. We're addressing a pandemic and homelessness locally, right? Food insecurity. During the pandemic, we were having lines miles long of food banks, people in cars to get food because food insecurity is a local issue where it used to be state and county. And now cities are stepping forward on that. So I say all that to say the role of cities is changing. And when it comes to things like you talking about reparations, well, with, you know, cash payments and all of those things, basic income, guaranteed income, all the stuff you're hearing about in Congress, it started in cities. It started in the city of Stockton with Mayor Michael Tubbs, right? And we're doing that in Long Beach now. We're doing all these other things. So the way you talk about reparations and all that stuff, it's likely not going to be some sweeping bill in Congress. It's not going to be like the Voting Rights Act, Civil Rights Act, Fair Housing Act, Clean Air Act, which were back to back to back between 1963 and 1970. That's not what's going to happen. Some big reconstruction of America made by Congress. It's going to be local cities innovating. It's going to be local cities, counties, school districts. You know, it's going to be mayors and principals. Those are the people who are going to actually, you know, deliver equity. That's who it's going to be. It's going to be local government.
Right. So how can people connect with you if they want to learn more about your campaign and learn more about you and what you're doing in the community? And if they want to know, like, how to get involved, how can they connect with you?
Sure. Well, you can certainly follow me on social media at Rex Richardson on Twitter. And we're on Instagram and all of that. You can also go to joinrexrichardson.com. If you want to sign up to volunteer, you want to help knock on some doors, you want to host the coffee meeting, go to joinrexrichardson.com/join. If you want to help us, you know, raise the money we need to run a robust campaign that touches every part of our city and gets our message out, then go to joinrexrichardson.com/donate. So, you know, we're off to a great start. Our campaign is picking up momentum across the entire city. We're fortunate to be you know, our campaign is chaired by Senator Delina Gonzalez. Speaker Rendon's joined our campaign. We've announced a number of council members and school board members and college board members who are all playing a part in our campaign to help make sure that we keep continue to move our city in a direction where no community is left behind, and we have what we need to address homelessness and keep our community safe and to make sure our city is resilient and fiscally sound.
That sounds great. So my final question to you is, what final thoughts do you have that you want to share with the listeners? And keep in mind, there's a lot of entrepreneurs all over the place. So do you want to talk about the poor? Do you want to talk about economic development?
Well, I'll tell you, I would just, just wish everyone, that they're safe and that they're healthy, that this pandemic does not put additional burden and duress on them as business owners, that they find ways to adapt and to innovate and to find economic success. And I just truly wish the best for you, Z, and your family. And I'm proud that I'm glad to, that you're still doing what you're doing, the SEO queen, and look forward to continuing to see your incredible work.
Well, thank you so much. And, Rex, I just have to say kudos to you for all the hard work you've done over the years. The Michelle Obama Library is definitely a point of pride for the community, along with all the other initiatives that you're doing out there. I invited you on the show because I just really wanted you to have your say and explain all the time you've been here. I know it's definitely, when you first got here and started getting involved, there was a lot of skeptics from the natives, but you've definitely won a lot of people over with your hard work and dedication and producing results. So I just wanted to thank you again for your time. And also, I wanted to thank all the listeners for listening to the SEO Queen Tech Show. This is a podcast to help you get more credibility, visibility, and profitability through inspiration, technology, and marketing insight. This podcast is for professionals and entrepreneurs who are looking to get more customers, clients, and patients. We're broadcast worldwide on Bashani Radio, iHeartRadio, and iTunes. Bashani Radio, always talking about everything from New York City. If you want to, you can always send us some feedback. And if you have any feedback or anything you want to give to me or to Rex, I'd be glad to facilitate that message. You can just click on the feedback button on the app. And also, as a thank you gift for listening, you can always go to SEOQueen.com and click on Speak to the SEO Queen to get your 15-minute complimentary strategy session. So without further ado, I wanted to thank you again for listening. And until next time.
It's time to grow with the SEO Queen. Get visibility like never before. The traffic's gonna explode. It's time to grow with the SEO Queen. Receive the perfect leads like never before. The traffic's gonna explode. It's time to grow.
New York City is where it started.
Globally is where we are.
Bashani Radio App. Download it for free in the App Store or listen online at BashaniRadio.com.